Hey, everybody, and welcome to Conquering Stress Podcast. I'm Dr. Bill Janoschak. As always, thanks for listening in. This is kind of a, so we go over this, if you guys are longtime listeners, about stress. And stress is physical, it's chemical, and it's emotional. So being a chiropractor, functional neurologist, functional medicine, we talk a lot about the physiology, about what's going on and the chemicals that our bodies do and how to stay healthy and live wonderful lives that we all want to live. So, but when we think of stress traditionally, we don't think about our bodies being under stress. We always think about the emotional stress. And in this day and age, and you know, we have these mental health is top of mind in just about every program and news headline and everything that you're going to see on TikTok and social media alike. And there's nothing more emotionally triggering than parent and a child. And with, you know, the autistic tsunami that's come over the last, you know, 15 or 20 years, and, you know, there's no doubt that that is one of the biggest mysteries and controversies about where it's come from. And I'm not going to even get into to that. We'll save that for another podcast. But the fact is that we're here. And with this whole new challenge that we have, we need more answers. And so that's why I brought this to you guys today. We have Michelle Ortega from Treeline Advocacy. And we're going to talk about parents with special needs kids and what they can do and what they need to expect and the stress that they're under. So, and I don't ask this a lot. I don't tell you guys this a lot because I just want you guys to suck up the information. But every one of you out there right now knows somebody with a special needs kids if you don't have one yourself. And we're about to give you some really good information that's inside that can help them. So I want you to share this, not for me, but for that person that you have in mind. If they need help, if they're overwhelmed, if they don't know where to go, we're about to give you all that information. So I would love to introduce Michelle Ortega. And how are you doing, young lady? Introduce yourself.
Yes. Hi, my name is Michelle Ortega. I am a parent to a child with autism. I have a five-year-old. She's a little girl. She's great. She's a wonderful kid. And through her, I've been able to learn so much advocating. And I'm just so happy to share all the information that I know.
Well, and that's really interesting because Michelle, you know, you mentioned that through her, you've learned so much about, programs and how to take care of it. And you're on the front lines because you're the parent of special needs. But you're also a little bit unique is because you were on the other side. As a social worker for 5 years, mm-hmm. you were on the other side helping these families just like you. And you were finding out how difficult they were finding navigating. You know, where do they go? What are these resources that everyone's saying that we have, but don't really be coming into fruition? So tell us about that journey with you.
Yeah, I mean, I was placed at being a social worker at the right time. I mean, I was pregnant. Phoenix was going with me to work. But through that, I was able to learn about so many programs that I was not aware of. And one of them was in home supportive services. And I started in home supportive services right after I got the diagnosis of my daughter. Brand new to it. I didn't even know what exactly meant to have a child with special needs.
So back up, just so the listeners can understand, what was the process of, because there's going to be somebody listening right now that's going to say, well, I don't know if I have to get a diagnosis because I don't know what was going on with your daughter that you went, this doesn't seem wrong.
So COVID was a blessing for me, because before that I was a full-time working mom. My kid was in daycare. I hardly got to see my kid. So when COVID happened, I was fortunate that I was able to work from home, and I was able to have my kid with me full time. And through that, I was able to notice that, hey, my kid is almost two, and she hasn't even said one word, not even mama, papa, nothing. So that's how it started, where I was like, hey, you know, she's I know the kids can be behind, and I always hear this, like, oh, let kids be, they'll come around. So I call the insurance, my medical doctor. I'm like, hey, I've noticed that my kid is not saying any words. I think she might be lacking some speech. That's all I thought to it. Because of COVID, we could have been seen in person. So they just kind of said, okay, let's work on this, let's work on that. That's about it. This is March of 2020. By September of 2020, we had a follow-up, and I said, hey, like, we've been trying, you know, to say words to her, she's still not repeating. They finally said, come into the office for a quick assessment. We went in with a speech therapist, and the speech therapist was the one that said, I think she might be autistic. So then I had to make an appointment to get an actual assessment by the doctor, by the developmental pediatrician. And that was in October of 2020. It was a 4-hour assessment, and it was assessed by the pediatrician, speech therapist, psychologist, and occupational therapy. So they did all the testing, they asked me all the questions. It was very exhausting, but at the end of that assessment, I didn't even have to go home. Right then, they told me she's autistic. So, not something that I was not expecting, because I was still going in with a mindset of she's just speech delay. That's it. But then I find out, no, she's autistic. And the doctor at that time said she can't grow out of it because she's very little. She was only 2.5. But I'm going to give you the diagnosis because it can open doors for you. And I said, okay.
The doors being the special
For
program.
resource, yeah. So she can be in the early start program. And I didn't even know where to begin, but he's the one that directed me and told me, call regional center and they'll help you. It's the first time I've ever heard of regional center. I called regional center. I was like, hey, I just got a diagnosis for my child. They said to call you guys. What happens now? And so they're like, okay, we're going to get the all information. They opened a case. They gave her early intervention, which meant services, ABA services in the home. So that's how we started. We started receiving ABA services in the home. A person came into my home 5 times a week for 2 hours a day. They were helping her with very basic things because she couldn't even look at you in the eye. Just very basic things. And then we also started occupational therapy in the home because she still could not feed herself. So very basic stuff. I had to put my feelings and my emotions to the side because I had to get my kid resources. I was still in denial. I was still in shock. I kept telling myself, the doctor doesn't know what he's doing. She's going to grow out of this. So that's how I started. At the same time, I just got hired to a new program in home supportive services for social services, not knowing that this program would open so many doors for me. It's just, it all happened at the right time.
So were you seeing this in as a social worker, you were also seeing families that were going through the same thing that you were?
Yes. Once I started in home supportive services, I was now going into people's homes doing assessments for children on the spectrum. And I was able to learn through them. You know, they didn't know about my situation back at home, but I was able to ask them questions. And through the parents, I was able to learn about other programs that are out there. So not only was I getting resources for myself, but also resources that I could share with other parents. And then also seeing the science and the trades. And for through that program, I was able to see, to accept it.
So this is the thing that's interesting to me, because like I'll see patients, on the spectrum and stuff, and it seems to be like a common thing is like nobody really knows. It was like they get a diagnosis, and I've seen some diagnoses that were just like, I'm like, how didn't they figure this out? It was just this. And then other ones are more, and then there's denial. How is it that the public education is about what is autism? How is it manifest? If you're a parent, what signs are you looking for so that you can get this early help as well?
Yeah, so for my kid was a speech delay. She was not pronouncing any words. Once I got the diagnosis, I was able to go back, and then I started making sense. My kid took forever to walk. My kid didn't crawl. She had a hard time even sitting. She had poor body coordination. She still could not feed herself. She had a hard time with food. She has a hard time till this day. She still has a hard time chewing certain textures of food. So she was eating a lot of blended food even at the time, which she should. I think at 2.5, she should be eating more solids, but at that time, she still was eating softer food, blended food. So once I got the diagnosis, it all connected. But before that, I didn't see it. I didn't see it. And the only thing I saw was she's not talking.
Well, so when you're working with your clients and everything, are you starting to bring these things up to families and having them get checked out? And do most families go through this thing about, I don't know what you're talking about at all, to denial? I mean, how are most people?
Yes, so it's a kind of a tough topic because you can see the signs as a parent. Now I can see it. Hey, that kid is not looking at you in the eye, or he's jumping, he's exciting, he's flapping the hands, he's walking in his tippy toes. He doesn't pay attention, he doesn't respond to his name, there's no eye contact. Now I see all the signs, but some parents, you cannot even bring it up to them because they're so in denial. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to accept it. The ones that do come up to me, there's people that come up to me and they're like, hey, I know that you have a child on the spectrum. I'm thinking about, I'm trying to see some things in my kid. What I always say is go get an assessment. Just go get an assessment. He might be on the spectrum. He might not be, but it's just a peace of mind. And maybe he just needs some support in some areas. It could just be speech or walking. Just go get an assessment. Because when they're little, it is hard to distinguish, is it just him being a kid, or is it then there's something else to it? So that's always my advice. Just go get an assessment. Once you get an assessment and you have an actual diagnosis, look for me. I can help you. I can connect you, because what happens is a lot of us get assessments, we get a diagnosis, and we don't know where to begin. Okay, your child's autistic. All right. The medical field is not as supported as it should be. My doctor told me call regional center, and that's as far as that went.
So let me interrupt
But
for a second. That so we've gone through there. You see some quirky, questionable things in the kids. You have like, let's get them checked out. You get the assessment. It's an emotional assessment. It, the kids with the diagnosis, or just kids in general, but it's a lot of energy out of you. There's emotional stuff going on. They point you to regional center, And with the regional center, you get some resources to help with things. So your advocacy, but there's programs that the government will have where you can get financial resources for the home, for in-home care, staying home. And of course, people would love that, just like you, because if you want to stay home, you take the financial burden off that. Is that where you kind of came in, where people were having difficulty receiving, jumping through the hoops to get the resources?
Yes, they're jumping into the hoops. They're not getting the information. They don't even know that the program exists.
So why?
Because right now, the only way that because they don't advertise it on TV, they don't advertise it as much. Like Medi-Cal, everybody knows about Medi-Cal. You see it on TV, you go anybody, everybody talks about it. You know about Medi-Cal. But in-home supported services, not that many know of the program. Even just basic care, like you need care in the home, they don't know where to call. It's still a pretty newish program. It's only been around in the late 90s, so it's still pretty new compared to Medi-Cal and food stamps. So what happens is the only way you can find out, like, hey, you know that there is a program that you can probably stay home, take care of your child. And it's not about like you can stay, that's, it's not about staying home. It's just when you have a child on the spectrum, there's so many therapies. Like I take my kid to therapy every day. There's so many assessments. It's not just your doctor assessment. It's regional center. It's the school. Every individual therapy that your child has, they have every 6 months, you have an assessment. There's so many assessments that take place. So unless you have a job that they're fully flexible, fully understanding, willing for you to leave to take your child to therapy and come back, I think that's the only way you can manage, or if you have your own business. But besides that, it is very difficult to maintain a full-time job and also be able to, because these therapies, they're not by your house. There's so much in need of therapies that anywhere that my kid can receive services, I'm gonna drive, because otherwise I might have to wait another 6 to a year. And that's time. I'm counting on time. My time, my kid is missing out on this time.
So does
So that's why.
is it in the regional that people are hearing about these programs initially, or is it from the doctor? Where, even though
Yeah,
it's
so
not readily available, but where, who's supposed to be telling people about this?
regional center should be telling people about the program for IHSS, and they do, and they also do some advocating themselves, but it's they're also they have such high number of clients, and it's only one person with a big caseload. They can only do so much, so they'll tell the parent, hey, call in-home supported services, submit application, apply, and see if you qualify. That's as far as they go. Some
Is
of them.
the application process look like?
First, okay, so if you want to apply for IHSS, you need to qualify for Medi-Cal first. So yeah, it has to be people that have an income limitation. But what they don't know is that regional center will give you a waiver so you can qualify for Medi-Cal without counting the income, your income as a parent. So your child has that waiver. So with that, you just need to have Medi-Cal, because in-home supportive services is funded through Medi-Cal. So then, so you call to apply, you submit an application, you can go into the office and apply there, and then they'll send you the paperwork. The social worker has up to 45 days to go into your home and do an assessment. So it is a process.
So here's my, I guess the question I'm looking at, so is the application the actual filling it out, Are these, you know, every time the government gets their hands on something, it's very confusing. Is the first part of the application process the hard part because they don't fill out, they don't check the right box or use the right words, or is it something that's easy, and then the restraint is the social work, because the social worker is supposed to do the verification.
Yeah, so the application itself is easy. Like I said, you call, you're giving information, and the application is really easy to fill out. But your basic information, name, address. And then they send out a letter that your doctor needs to fill out to approve you for the services. And it's a one page, and it's like four questions, and that's a yes, no answer.
Okay.
Yes, I
That's
this
easy.
it's really, really. Yes, it's pretty easy. There is some parents that have a hard time with doctors approving them for in-home supportive services. And if the doctor says no, that's as far as that application went. Because in order for you to receive in-home supportive services, we need authorization from a doctor.
Okay,
But
so
for the most part,
yeah, so with the doctors, are they generally the doctors that had done the assessment, or is it just a regular pediatrician?
So yes, it can be the doctor that did the assessment. It can be your pediatrician. There's a few on that paper. It gives you a list of different people that can authorize for services.
Do you find
So it could be your
Yeah, so do you find that like general pediatricians understand autistic kids, or is there more of a specialty that's working with special needs kids? Do you know anything
So
about?
I do think that they do, but they don't they there's one question on that paper that they don't understand. And so that's where they tend to mark no, because they see it as like, if I mark yes, I'm telling the state that this parent cannot take care of their child, and then they are prone for child services. Like so there's that one questions where it, I don't, very few doctors do that, where they're like, no, because then I'm pretty much telling the state that you're not able to take care of your own child. That's not what the question means. And even though you try to explain it to them, they don't change their outcome. They're like, nope, that's just how it is. So it's just how the question is being worded, where I think that doctor's kind of tricky. But for the most part, they agree that the child needs in-home care. So they'll mark the little box yes, and then that's how the social worker comes out to assess.
Okay,
But
so
just because they marked the box,
just to recap, so the parent's job of filling out the application, pretty simple. The doctor's job of verifying, yes, this is something that they would need, fairly simple. So, and then the next thing is the social worker coming out, and like I asked before, is the social worker's job to assess or to verify? Or what's the
Yes,
social?
as to us. So the social worker's job is to do a thorough observation and assess the client in the home, because the program is just for in the home. Yes, the child could have a lot of behavioral problems. He might need a lot of support, but this program is just for in the home.
Okay.
So let's say if in the home this child behaves well, then there's no need for him to have this program. So that's where it gets tricky. Also, the state has regulations where it's called a minor regulations, that the parent, no matter what the diagnosis is, the parent is still has to take care of their child no matter what. So they're not going to pay you to cook for your child, because all parents cook for their child. So that's where the limitation comes in also.
I see.
And some parents don't know that.
So, and then just through other conversations that we've had previously, not recorded and out for everybody to listen, but you said that the main restraint on people getting this is actually the social workers themselves not really being having a clear picture of how to assess. Is that correct?
Yes, they don't have a clear picture because they're not, they have insight training about autistic children, what to look for, but they need more training because to them, when they come to the home, if you don't know any different, you're just gonna say, that's just a kid. He's just being a kid. That's it. They do have questions that they need to ask. There's different ways that we assess, but even with that, the social worker could still say there's not enough evidence to prove that this child needs more care than any other kid at his age.
Okay,
So that's what tends to happening.
so let's say that the social worker's you and you're awesome and you know
Yeah.
exactly what to look for. You do the in-home service, you're going to go, yeah, based on my experience, everything's right. What the parents have implied, the doctor said, I concur. What happens after that?
Yes. So you come in and then you do the assessment, and then it's not just my observation, it's also what the doctor says. We request paperwork from the doctor. If the child's receiving any therapies, we request paperwork from the therapies. And then also if he's receiving regional center, also the assessment from regional center and from the school. So then it is a process. We have to collect all that data. We have to read it thorough to support for either an approval or denial. And that also gets tricky too, because sometimes, and I always tell my parents, if these children are having a hard time at therapies or behavior problems, you have to make sure that's also being stated in those reports. Because when you're trying to apply for this program, and if I'm reading that this child is thriving and there's no behavior problems, I'm going to deny it because there's no support to your claim. You have to understand that when the social worker comes into your home, she's only there for an hour, hour and a half. And then the rest of her approval or denial is going to come from all this paperwork that we're requesting, and these are legal documents. So read all these documents before you sign, because this can open doors in the future or it can close them.
Okay, so we've did the parents' part, the doctor's part, the in-home assessment. We gathered all the other activities and services that they've had from different professionals, and everything lines up. Do they just cut you a check? Do you have to go over and do it?
Yes. So if it's an approval, they'll send you a letter saying you got approved for the protective supervision, which is it's part of the in-home supportive services, but it's an additional program. So let's say you got approved. By this time, you've probably already been waiting 3 to 6 months to hear about the approval or denial because it does take time. And then as a parent, you have to, if you become the provider, the caregiver, you have to do a background check, fingerprint. You need to be legal to work in the United States. Otherwise, you cannot be a provider, caregiver. And then the social worker will submit back payment. So then you'll receive back payment from the day that you apply. So yeah, so because it is a process, it is a process. So you'll receive all that back payment, and then now just like everything else, they do it all online, direct deposit. And yeah, and then it all do, and payment varies from children to children. I know a lot of parents would call and say, well, my kid only received this amount of hours, and I know that my neighbor kids received this amount of hours. It's like it all varies on child per child. So you cannot compare, but
Let's go back to the more common thing that we're seeing, or the frustrating part that brought you here today. So,
yeah.
parents do their part, doctors do their part, the social worker comes in and says, ah, I don't see it. And you're going,
Yeah.
WTF, what's next?
Yeah, so the social worker is not seeing it, and then she's able to collect enough evidence through all this paperwork to say, this is why I don't see it, because regional says this is support my claim. So for me as a advocate, the parents like, no, I don't agree with this. They got denied, and the parents upset because they don't agree with it. So what they do is they hire an advocate, somebody like myself. So I come in, I connect with the family, I assess the child myself because I know exactly what they're looking for because I used to do the assessments before for the approvals or denials. If I don't see it either, then it's all about educating the parent. This is why they denied you. Maybe you need to collect more evidence. So, make sure that all this is also on your IEPs and your regional center. It's more like educational. But if I do see it and I read the, and based on what the parents' information, then we appeal, we go to court. And so then what we do is we're going to build enough evidence so when we go to court with the judge, we can present the case and say that what the county stated was incorrect, and this family is entitled to that program.
So, do you as an advocate, can you file the appeal, or is that an attorney thing? Is it another
No, as
work?
yeah, I mean the as an advocate, I can file the appeal. As long as the family gives me authorization, I can file the appeal. I go with them to the hearing. And then we just yeah,
So
we advocate for.
do you act as like an attorney would in a case?
Yeah.
Where you say, okay, I'm a special advocate, I'm a social worker, and this was denied, and this was denied, and this was incorrect based on X, Y, and Z, and what we found was here. Here's the documentation proofing this, that triggered this, and you make the case,
Yeah, so you make the case, you paint the picture of why it should be approved.
and
The
then judge on say, oh yeah, tree line advocacy, Michelle. You're so good, and you're just you crossed all the T's and dotted these I's. I hereby grant this there, or is this okay? And they bring all the paperwork and said, we're going to let you know in 60 days, or
yes,
I get back to.
the yeah, so the hearing, it's like an hour, 2 hours. You present everything. The judge also, they're very thorough when it comes to protective supervision. They'll ask questions to me, to the parent, about why the child needs protective supervision. And then the judge will say, okay, I will let you know of my result or my answer in 90 days. So in 90 days, we receive a letter saying, yes, they got granted with a protective supervision, or no, it still remains as a denial. And they'll
Okay.
tell you the reasons why it will still be a denial.
Well, yeah, and those would be some things that you can talk about. I want to look at the global stuff, like a 10,000 square or foot view. What percentage, just so the listeners can get an idea, like what percentage of these the services just go through and it's just very simple. And what percentage are denied or need to be appealed? Do you have any idea?
So I mean as a parent, and what I hear from other parents as well is you get a lot of pushback, all programs. And one thing that we all say as parents is it's already hard as it is raising a child with special needs. Advocating or getting services shouldn't be this hard because it feels that it's just they try to find ways to deny you for services more so than approve. Yes.
So yeah, it would be very similar to for the listeners, like if you guys have HMOs, and I'm not naming anyone specific, but in general, they have algorithms. You come in, you have this. If you're this sick, then you can get that. If you're not that sick, you have to go over here. And then it's just a labyrinth that you need to go through. When did you decide that you needed to stop being the social worker and you needed to change what you were doing? Because it sounded like you were doing great work for your clients as a social worker, but then you just kind of jumped ship from one to the other. What was the trigger for that?
I mean, like I love the program. I believe in the program. I love being a social worker. But my kid is growing. She's getting faster and bigger. And so last year on my birthday, actually, August in August, my birthday, I was turning 35, and I just realized. Not that I realize my kid doesn't do well in the summers. You know, she's off routine. She's not going to school. And there was an increase of behavior. And I remember sitting at my desk trying to finish my work because I had requested some time off. And my kid doesn't stop climbing. And it's a safety concern. It's either do I work or do I take care of my kid? And I couldn't do both, and obviously my kid's more important because I'm not going to lose my kid. She's doing things, putting herself in a really risky situation, and it's not that she's trying to hurt herself. It's just she likes to climb. She's a climber, and I can remove as much as I can, and she'll find ways to climb. And so that was my breaking point where I realized something had to change because I couldn't do it anymore. And I think that most parents feel that way. They do, you know, when they feel that way and they don't know either A, they don't know about the program, or B, they get denied, so they don't have another option. But I just, something had to change because it kind of felt like it was like life or death decision.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, it's obviously very emotional for you just kind of going through all that you have, because you can tell that you have a heart for helping other people, especially special needs, because you're living it. You know what it's like day to day. We had talked about when people see a parent with a special needs kid, they're going to go like, oh wow, that must be a handful, but not realizing this is 24/7. There's no off button, there's no rest. And so this program gives you the opportunity, because you, like you said, you've got to feed your kid, you got to house your kid, you got to let them sleep. So that's just being a parent, but you need that time because you have to go do a 3-hour therapy in LA and then drive back and forth, and that's 5 hours out of your day. And you got to come back over here, then you might have ABA from, for 2 hours during that day, and then they've got a nap or just like that, and just be a kid. And somebody's got to drive the kid there, and not all the appointments are convenient to work hours. And can you share? Because again, there's people listening out there, and they're listening. Maybe they're watching this on YouTube or whatever, but it doesn't matter. And they're going, I wonder if I need that. Can you share an experience or two, like maybe with one of your clients, about how that's impacted their lives after they've gotten the program versus before they had the support?
I mean, one of my clients, she kept getting denied and denied, and she even went through regional center. They're supposed to advocate for you, and not even regional center was able to get her the program to get it approved. And she had been waiting for almost 2 years. That is unacceptable. It's a long time. So once I became her advocate, I was able to push through, talk to the social worker, and get the case approved within like 2 months. And it was amazing. I was so happy for her because you can just see that stress, that peace of mind, at least when it came to finances. This is a single parent that cannot maintain a full-time job, not because she cannot work as for herself, but because she has so many demands when it comes to her child, and you take her to a bunch of therapies, school and everything, and the kid needs constant care. So, and I'm not talking about, yes, all children need care, but this is a whole different level. Because if we don't take care of our kids, they can die. I mean, my kid puts everything in her mouth. She is 5 years old and she still puts everything in her mouth. And she doesn't understand that some things you cannot eat. So it's just constantly watching what she's putting in her mouth, taking it out of her mouth. Climbing is one of them. If for some reason I don't lock the door, my kid will take off running. They have no awareness of people, of cars. I mean, they're putting themselves at risk every day, all day. These children don't sleep at night. And when my kid is up at night, I'm up at night because I don't know what she's gonna do. So we're just in so much stress. It never turns off. And then on top of that, to have to go maintain a full-time job, and if your employer is not understanding or flexible with you, it's really, really tough. It's really hard. And so I'm so glad that there is programs like this for, in home supported service.
Allows people to not have to choose between feeding your kid and getting them the resources they need to be more productive human being, and taking that stress off exactly what you need to do. And how that works. So the
Yeah,
yeah.
and one more thing is we don't have the option of daycare. We don't. We don't. I cannot put my kid on a daycare. First of all, they won't accept her. So, and then second of all, if they do, they don't take care of her. I've seen it happen where they don't feed her, they don't give her water. And I know you can say this happens to other kids too that are not on the spectrum. I get it. But my kid is not being taken care of, so I don't have that option, even if I wanted to work full time.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. And this is why I wanted to have you on here, is because this is an important thing. With one of my daughters, we have in Inland Regional as well, and they've been great. I mean, we don't have the we're not I don't need the other programs because mine's highly functional, sometimes too much, but I do know so many people that need your services because it's you need that help. And I'm never for handouts, but I'm always for hands up. When we give people a hand up and families a hand up, and it takes the stress out of you, which gives you the time to cast your genius to help people navigate through government programs, any government programs, I think it's a necessary thing. And people are out there right now, and if you're listening to this, I want you to kind of pay attention to the people that you know with special needs kids, is there's no off button. And like Michelle just said, is if the kids are up, you're up. They don't know not to, stick your tongue in the light socket or stop climbing, don't do this. And it's not about, it's not like a behavioral, it's something they need more help on. There's resources out there that they're just so hard to navigate, and you can take so much stress out of your life, and you can make your family life so much easier with these advocacy programs. So I wanted to come out and just kind of highlight you and let people know that there's advocates out there that's whose job is to navigate that. It's like having a tax attorney when you're trying to figure out, like, how do I maximize? This is an expert, ladies and gentlemen, that's been through this so many times. It's like the back of her hand, and she can help you and identify those things. So if you're struggling with getting the resources that you need for your family, give her a call, and we'll have all your resources down into the notes here. Any parting wisdom that you can help with?
Well, I always say you are their biggest advocate when you're their parent. You are their advocate, you are their teacher, their doctor, you're everything to these kids. Advocate for them. Do what you need to do. And if you're struggling, having a hard time, hire an advocate, hire a lawyer, anybody that is can take that fight for you, because you are entitled to these services. They're there for a reason. And what makes us different from other parents is that not only are we parents, but we're also caregivers. So
Absolutely.
that's the difference.
Well, awesome. I really appreciate you coming back on and doing this. And so again, I'm gonna hound on this one. Get out and share this with the people that need this. Michelle will take good care of you and get everything going that she needs to. And this is Dr. Bill Janoschak for the Conquering Stress Podcast, and we'll see you next time.